Gateway Market and Cafe is Des Moines' locally owned grocery and specialty food store, centrally located at ML King Parkway and Woodland Ave. Enjoy chef-crafted prepared foods, artisan baked goods, organic produce, hand-cut meats, local and international cheeses, wines, and craft beer. Gateway's Cafe is open for dine-in, carry-out, and delivery service 7 days a week. Stop by or visit gatewaymarket.com for more details. Gateway Market, good food, great community. Welcome to the Fallon Forum. This is Ed Fallon. I'm your host. And we're coming to you from the heart of America's heartland, Des Moines, Iowa. Underwriting by Gateway Market, a Des Moines grocery and cafe offering artisan, local, and global foods, and catering for business and social events. More information at gatewaymarket.com. Our program's bumper music provided by the Des Moines Irish Session. With me today, my guest, Charles Goldman. Back for round two.
Yeah, how's it going, Ed?
Good. Have you been
2 weeks in a row, huh?
Have you been eating any kangaroo meat?
Not that I know of. No. But yeah. Then again, you know, I don't buy unlabeled. I don't buy ground beef, period. But nevertheless, I wouldn't buy one that's not labeled. That's where it's coming from.
I see a movie where Soylent beef is made from kangaroo.
Oh, it's Soylent Green is people.
That's right. Soylent beef.
That actually is a very classic movie.
Thank
Charlton
you.
Heston, but... And it's very primitive, but it is kind of scary. Very dark. I mean, it's like in black and white.
Isn't the year 2024?
I don't remember.
I think so. I think the year has already passed. So who knows what we're reading, Charles?
I mean, it's really weird because it's like one of those science fiction movies that's supposed to be the future, but it just looks like L.A. You know, at the time.
Yeah, but yeah. No, there are futuristic movies out there that don't make any sense. That's one of them, I think. But they're futuristic
movies.
Well,
no, why do you think Soylent Green doesn't make any sense?
You think we're going to start eating each other?
Well, it's kind of a wasted resource. You know. I mean, the whole premise of giving you a, you know, kind of talk you into dying, old people dying, and it helps to balance the books and, you know, reduce the deficit.
But do they wait till they're old? I thought they didn't. How old
Well, the point is
if you get too old, you get too tough. You know, you want to kind of... harvest those younger people.
It's mostly older people, but you know, they try to induce you into this, or it's some sort of arena. It looked kind of like,
you know,
igloo.
This is another movie I've never seen. I've just seen the trailer.
You should definitely watch it. Okay.
I'll watch it on a full stomach.
All right.
So there's no segue to where we're going next. We're talking about the First Amendment.
Right. This conversation is apropos. Maybe it was about a month ago we were discussing or sort of had a protean discussion about separation of church and state.
Right.
And you felt that maybe it was worth revisiting.
Silly me.
You might regret this, yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, the First Amendment seems pretty clear to most people I know.
Okay. And in fact, let's start with that.
All right.
Okay. Let's first of all read the First Amendment.
All right, class.
Because remember, we have a Supreme Court, which is originalist, which is... it's only about what the Founding Fathers had to say. It's by the fact that Alito will quote, like, you know, jurisprudence from the year 10,000, or 1,000, right? Which, by the way, people, the United States didn't exist in the year 1,000, you know.
But it was in God's mind.
No, it's just they go back to British common law, which is supposed to be the genesis of our law. In many ways, it was.
You digress.
Right. So, the First Amendment. Well, first of all, I think we should say, you'll notice that the First Amendment is not the one that talks about guns. Right? So
right.
The Founding Fathers obviously felt that this is the First Amendment and this is the most important one.
Let's say with the Ten Commandments, the most important one is the first one.
Right, which is right. You won't love a God other than me.
Yeah,
not like what you're supposed to do morally.
I would be really, really ticked off if you did.
Exactly. Okay, so the First Amendment, the most important amendment, obviously, and the first thing it says and talks about is Congress shall make no law representing an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof.
Respecting no establishment, right?
Right.
Yeah, okay.
Or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press, or the right of the people peaceably to assemble, and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. So the first thing you should notice about that is, you notice who makes these laws? The Congress.
Yeah.
Not executive orders. Right. Right? The president doesn't make law. Right? So we shouldn't be having any president making executive orders that relate to
and all presidents
and how it's practiced.
Well, no, yeah. All presidents have used executive orders.
Yes.
Obama did a lot. Biden did.
Nobody has really done anything close to Trump.
No, though. No, that's true.
So, first of all, Congress is supposed to be making the law.
Right.
We, of course, live in a time in which Congress makes no laws unless they're for giving people tax breaks.
Because they have no backbone.
Right.
It's removed upon entry into the U.S. Capitol.
Absolutely. Okay, so what is not clear about this? Because, you know, if you read the MAGA Christian nationalist inspired screeds on this, they'll tell you that there's nothing in the Constitution about separation of church and state. What does it say? It says, number one, the fear of the founders, mainly Jefferson and Madison, who are really the fountainheads of the Bill of Rights, mm-hmm. the overriding fear, and we'll talk about some of the quotes that, you know, both of them attributed to them. The fear was the establishment of a state religion.
Yeah.
Right? So this whole notion that the United States is a Christian nation is wrong.
It's contrary. It's not just wrong. It's contrary to the intent of the founding fathers.
Right. They, you know, the people who espouse this, including, you know, people like J.D. Vance, who's now what, this is his third religion? His Catholicism is his third version of religion?
Sometimes it takes a little trial and error.
No. Okay. So the people who came over to the United States early on to the colonies, a lot of them weren't Christians, at least not traditional Protestants or Catholics. They came from many sects of Christianity.
Anabaptists, Quakers.
Quakers.
Sure.
The Jews came over. There were people who were Islamic. There were people, you know, at this point, the United States has about 2,000 identified sects of religion. Okay, wasn't 2,000 at the very beginning. But the point is that the Mayflower wasn't made up of a bunch of Christian nationalists. They weren't made up of a bunch of evangelical Christians, right?
They were all the same religion on that particular boat.
But the thing was that, interestingly, one of the critiques of Jefferson is that why would the Quakers have come over here to escape the persecution of European, usually, you know, states, you know, to only come over here to come to colonies where a lot of them had established religions that were, in fact, intercalated with the civic government, you know?
Well, they came over here to found Pennsylvania and Quaker State Oil.
No, but the point is that it's true. I mean, this is you could look at the tradition of many of the colonies and say, well, yeah, this is a Christian nation because when they came over here, they set up basically dictatorships of one sect of religion in a number of the colonies, including places like Rhode Island, Massachusetts.
What was Rhode Island?
I'm not sure. Well, Rhode Island was, I think, Roger Williams, and that did have a state religion, but actually Roger Williams was one of the earliest of the governors of a colony to invoke a form of religion, of religious freedom. Because, in fact, one of the earliest synagogues in the United States is in Rhode Island.
So, but you're saying the Constitution...
The Constitution was written against the background of what had been
in some place. And as a way to put the brakes on that, to maybe undo it in some cases.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
why those devious little founding fathers?
But the point is that although it's true that these two statements, free exercise and, you know, not establishing a state religion, they leave something to be desired. Because as we've seen with the multiple cases through the years that have gone to the courts and often to the Supreme Court, if the doctrine of religion somehow does not accord with what's allowed in the secular law, how do you rationalize that conflict? It's very easy to say this, but it was pretty clear when you read the statements, you read the Federalist Papers, that what Jefferson and Madison were doing was that they thought the two most important things were leave people alone to practice however they wanted. There was no society that was hurt by the free exercise of religion and disparate views on God.
Right.
And the second, what they saw, particularly Madison hated the established religions of Europe, in particular the Vatican and the UK, Church of England and Catholicism,
yeah.
Because he viewed them as an eternal source of strife throughout the history of Europe. He didn't look kindly on the Crusades as an enterprise.
It's hard to do that. I know there are, quote, Christians who...
Ask Pete Hegseth. He wrote a book on that.
How wonderful the Crusades were?
He basically is, yes, absolutely. That's why he has those tattoos. That's what he believes that, a true warrior is a warrior for Christ. You know, but all of Pete Hegseth's...
Except if it's a woman, if it's belief, Joan of Arc, burn her at the stake.
Well, I don't know about... I don't know about burn her at the stake, but at least if she's on a promotion list, take her off. all about someone like Hegseth is pretty obvious, because if anybody had looked in his books, everything that he talks about now, he was talking about already.
Hmm.
And he and Mrs. Hegseth, who has an untoward amount of influence with him and within the Department of Defense, not the Department of War, I will not call it the Department of War, they are part of a sect of apostolic Christianity, which believes that there should only be one vote per household in the United States, and that vote should be determined by the head of the household, who, of course, is a male.
Gee, what could go wrong there?
Right. But so anyway, to me, although, yes, how it's been implemented has to go, in some sense, case by case, but the thrust of the First Amendment, more important even than the fact you should own guns, is that there should be no state religion and leave people alone.
But it's also about the right to say what you want.
Well, that's freedom of speech.
Right. It's important to remember, too, that it speaks to that as well as separation of church and state.
But the point is, the way the First Amendment is structured is that they separated those rights as important to be separated, because there's something specific about religion and freedom of speech which requires them to be adjudicated independent of each other. So here are some of the things. I mean, you asked for some of the quotes. So Jefferson, referring to the Virginia Act for establishing religious freedom: "Our civil rights have no dependence on our religious opinions. Therefore, prescribing any citizen as unworthy to public confidence by laying upon him an incapacity of being called to the office of trusts, unless he profess or renounce this or that religious opinion, is depriving him injuriously of these privileges and advantages to which is common to his fellow citizens." So this relates to the fact that the only other reference to religion in the Constitution, other than the First Amendment, is Article 6, which says that you cannot have a religious test, for that you can serve in public office.
Right.
That is the only... Now, let's also say an important thing here. In spite of whatever version you may have in the Christian madrasa you may be going to.
The what?
Did
you throw a Jewish term into...
No, madrasas are Islamic.
Oh, Islamic, right.
Islamic, schools.
Right, sure.
There's no mention of Jesus in either the Declaration of Independence or the Constitution. There's no mention of Christianity in either document. When they do mention it in the Declaration of Independence, it is the creator. It is a very inclusive term. The other thing is, when Jefferson spent most of the last years of his life putting together the life and morals of Jesus of Nazareth, and what he did was he went through various translations of the Bible, of the New Testament, in the original language, right? Not just in English. I know a lot of people, they go to...
I thought King James was the original language.
A lot of the people who are religious leaders are not exactly religious scholars and couldn't read these documents in the original language, but he did. And what he did was he basically cut and pasted together a Bible which eliminated anything superstitious, miraculous, or unorthodox. He basically saw that Jesus was... He didn't go with Jesus' divinity, his resurrection, or the miracle, most of the miracles. He simply saw Jesus as a moral teacher and reformer. And that was the book he put together.
That takes some of the fun out of it.
I know. He also specifically talks about the separation of church and state in a letter he sent to the Danbury Baptists on January 1st, 1802. And then Madison, who really hated, you know, again, as we said, European versions of
because he saw the oppression that came along with it, the political oppression.
Well, this is what he said in his later life, Madison. In the papal system, government and religion are in a manner consolidated, and that is found to be the worst of all governments. In most of the governments of the old world, the legal establishment of a particular religion, and with or with very little toleration of others, makes a part of the political and civil organization, and there are few of the most enlightened judges who will maintain that those systems have been favorable to either religion or to government. Hmm. So it's a lie. It's a lie. Whether the Supreme Court says it is or not, it's a lie. The First Amendment is about separation of church and state. Yeah.
It's pretty clear. It's pretty clear.
I think so the language is pretty clear. The Establishment Clause is pretty clear.
Astounding to me that they can make these arguments that basically undergird their support for a Christian nation. You know, it's so contrary to the obvious intent and the obvious wording even.
Yeah, and you know, I think they need to deal with the fact that Christianity certainly informed the moral fabric of the United States,
right.
But it wasn't the only influence.
Right.
And the blood and earth types like J.D. Vance, the Mayflower brought people here who weren't just Christian. Maybe the Mayflower didn't, but certainly all the other early colonists were a mix of a lot of religious beliefs. Yep. Or none.
Yeah.
There may have been atheists among them, for all we know.
Hey, we're going to take a short break here. Ed Fallon, your host, Charles Goldman with me today, folks. Back in a minute with a reminder that underwriting for this program is provided by Dr. David Drake, a psychiatrist serving patients in Iowa and Colorado. More information at 515-229-5085.
Thanks to Central Iowa realtor Joe Henry. Residential, commercial, land, Joe Henry's been covering all that for 23 years. He's also a leading community activist and a strong advocate for locally owned businesses. Call Joe Henry at 515-208-7312. That's 515-208-7312. You're responsible for a lot, and it's easy to become overwhelmed, to feel helpless, even hopeless. What's not so easy is finding your way back to feeling and functioning better. Psychiatrist Dr. David Drake helps individuals and couples throughout Iowa with the convenience and privacy of televideo counseling. Dr. Drake also prescribes medication when needed, and his services are offered on a self-pay, negotiated fee basis. If you need help, don't delay. Contact Dr. Drake at daviddrakefamilypsychiatry.com.
Welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Ed Fallon here, folks, with my guest today, Charles Goldman, coming at you from the middle of corn country here, Des Moines, Iowa, in America's heartland. Hey, underwriting for the program provided by real estate agent Joe Henry. More information at 515-208-7312. All right, Charles, I know you are a big fan of Pete Hegseth.
Yep, one of my favorites.
Yep. And, I mean, there's so much to talk about with this guy. When I think of Pete Hegseth, I think of scary. And when I see what he's doing to the U.S. military...
What in particular do you...
Well, purging it of women, of one thing. Purging it of people who disagree with him.
That's a bigger danger.
Yeah, I know. People who have some sense of restraint when it comes to the use of military force. I mean, I'm not a big fan of the U.S. military. I mean, I respect the men and women who commit to service of our country. I get that. My dad was very deeply committed to his time as a sergeant in the U.S. Army.
How long was he in the Army?
Oh, I can't remember now. But he moved from that to working on defensive matters in the private sector, and then he ended up with the Department of the Defense. So his whole lifetime.
What did he do for the Department of Defense?
You know, he would never talk about it much, but it had to do with shipping and handling. That was it. Shipping and handling. It was always in quotes. And so we never knew what exactly he was shipping and handling until he got the assignment to find the new masthead for the USS Constitution. That is harder done than it sounds.
Yeah.
They found an amazingly, I think it was a Douglas fir maybe, from the Pacific Northwest. And he oversaw the shipping and handling of that from the Northwest to Boston Harbor, and the installation of the new mast on the old vessel. It got quite a bit of press back in the time, but who knows what else he shipped and handled?
Right,
I have no idea.
Sounds more like he's working for the CIA.
Well,
because they're always working for some sort of trading corporation.
But you know, I mean, my dad would not function well under a U.S. Department of Defense headed by this guy.
Well, I also. I know it may be hard to believe, but I also spent 23 years in the Air Force.
Yeah.
You know, and as I've said to people who got in my face at demonstrations after that, I earned my right to be out here. And I feel like advocating for the other members of the force. Because I think what it's pretty clear now is that politicians talk a great game about how they care about the veterans and everything else. And they perform, you know, sort of pro forma talk about, you know, their sacrifice and everything else. But it's all, to me, performative for the most part. And particularly when it comes from Donald Trump, it's completely performative.
Donald Trump did everything he could to avoid any.
Well, just beyond that. I mean, he has shown himself to really be dismissive in so many ways.
Well, remember what he said about John McCain? I prefer soldiers who don't get captured.
And this is my question. He says that, and the journalist or supposed journalist who was there didn't say, what does that statement mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean,
Mr. Trump.
And subsequent journalists could have asked that question.
Right.
And they probably would have been told, shut up, quiet, piggy.
Yeah, probably. If they were a woman, obviously.
Yeah, right, okay.
He would, well, in terms of male journalists, I mean, they're just stupid.
Yeah.
Or they have some sort of disability that he feigns.
So what about...
What about Hegseth?
Yeah.
Okay, so first of all, Hegseth, talk about performative, is, and again, going back to his books about the warrior, and it's a movie version of the warrior.
Right.
This is this whole fixation on testosterone. You know, we're gonna
have an actual test to make sure you've got enough.
Yeah, we just want you to be healthy.
How does that apply to women entering the military?
Well, given what he wants to do with women entering the military, which is eliminate as many of them as possible, that if they make testosterone above a certain level of requirement, that's going to eliminate a lot of the women who would be eligible to be in the military. You know,
maybe that's his goal. It sounds like
he's got such a retrograde view of the capabilities of women, and you know, he has this traditional, as we said, a lot of this is informed by, you know, his marriage to the present Mrs. Hegseth. He credits her, one of the reasons why he keeps her so close evidently to his work at the Department of Defense is that he credits her with having turned him around.
I mean, he used to be a nice person?
No. You know, and in terms of him abstaining from alcohol and not doing the things that we know that he was accused of doing beforehand.
Party photos proving it.
Well, whatever the issue, yeah. The question of the woman who says that he raped her, and, you know, nobody can say yes or no. Yes, there was a settlement, and... but the point is, he has a really retro view of what a warrior is. And that view requires, in his mind, that they be male. And so he's trying to purge the military of as many women, particularly higher up in the command structure, as well as anybody of color in the command structure.
And fat people. Well, I think that's his own term, right?
Yes. But the point is that they're doing it under the ruse of the most ridiculous thing, which is that it's that the military is not a place to experiment with woke, right? And that it's a meritocracy. I mean, his presence as defense secretary tells you
talk about
it's not a meritocracy.
Talk about a DEI appointment.
Has never, ever taken care of an organization this large and complex. It's obvious that he's the wrong person for the job. I mean, the whole thing with running out of the missiles was foreseeable.
You mean in Iran?
Right. And yet it was a big surprise, as always. It's always a big surprise. Nobody told me. Well, one reason why maybe nobody told him was because he's just like Trump, which is when you put a bunch of your of sycophants around you and get rid of people who might actually disagree with you, the sycophants understand that the only way to convey information to you is to tell you what you want to hear.
Right. Yeah.
Right? And
General Milley, for example.
Well, Milley just, he just disrespected Trump and he made it obvious. I mean, Milley literally, called up the Chinese and said, ignore everything that's happening here in the turnover around the turnover of power.
That'll, in that 2020. That went well.
Yeah. And they are as Paul Krugman wrote about, they're Putinizing our military. Now the question is,
what does that mean?
Well, that essentially the generals are political commissars. They're not chosen for their capabilities.
Well, they're
chosen for their allegiance the dictator.
The same reason everyone is chosen by Trump, whether it's a primary candidate against a Republican who disagrees with him, whether it's a Supreme Court nominee, whether it's a member of his cabinet, any position at all. It's got to be unqualified, unquestioning devotion to the leader.
Right. And there's two problems. One, that you have to be a person who will tell them what they want to hear. And two, you can't outshine the person who's supposedly higher than you in the hierarchy.
You can't outshine the narcissist in chief.
Right. And in that sense, Hegseth is no different from Trump.
Although he
only
himself,
by degree.
Yeah, he's also a little bit less narcissistic.
Yeah. I mean, for instance,
he has to be in order to keep the
position.
For
instance, they let go, Randy George, General Randy George. He was the person within the American military who understood drone warfare the best. Why? Because the Ukrainians taught him about it, right? If we're seeing anything in Iran is spending millions of dollars on missiles that you expend in one fell swoop over a number of weeks versus $25,000 drones is the warfare of the past. The warfare of the future is drones, is cheap, reproducible junk.
Yeah, and I'm going to go a step further and say the warfare of the future is no war.
We can't
keep going down this path of conflict management by shooting each other.
They're going to have to repopulate the earth with a different species before that's going to happen.
You think cockroaches will do less damage?
No, I just think it's going to be very hard to deprogram humans away from war. But
it has to happen.
There certainly
is a strong element within
we
us.
We would
that,
be better
that abhors
off.
War.
We would be better off, but it's going to take a lot of evolution to move away from that.
Better evolve fast.
We need to.
Because right now the weapons of war are beyond imagination. I mean, we haven't even talked about a guy like Hegseth in charge of the America's nuclear deterrent. And I know eventually Trump has his finger on that button. That's even more disturbing. Although I'm not sure who's more disturbing in terms when it comes to the threat of nuclear war, Trump or Hegseth, because I think Hegseth actually believes that nuclear war would be a good thing for him because he would be caught up in the rapture. I don't believe Trump has any religious beliefs, so to speak, at all, good or bad. And Trump and Hegseth, it's a demented belief, but my impression is he believes that. So how is it not in his best interest, personally, to say, hey, what the heck, it's time to nuke somebody? blow it up and let's take all this, get out of here.
There was a discussion within the administration, supposedly, and you know, everything gets leaked on from this administration. It's unbelievable.
You think that's intentional?
Oh, of course it's intentional.
Okay.
that there were a number of advisors that were fearful that Trump, with the sycophantic, you know, following of Hegseth, would come to think that perhaps use of some sort of tactical nuclear weapon in Iran would be justifiable.
Putin is he's threatened as much in Ukraine.
Right. Well, you have to understand there's a real similarity, more between Putin and Hegseth than Putin and Trump, which is that Putin also is very overtly, you know, warrior, masculine, you know, and he sees himself
as a defender. Rides the horse
without a shirt on. He sees himself as a defender of Western civilization. That's what
Putin does.
Yeah. He advertises himself that he's defending traditional values. You know, it's one reason why Tucker Carlson loves him.
Yeah.
Because Putin is anti-woke, right? You know, he's about he's like the other side. Well, not even the other side. He's the same side as some in the United States are, of like, you know, the Samuel Huntington, kind of view of Clash of Civilizations. Mm. You know, which is, it's the West against Islam.
So what do you do when you've got a Secretary of War, defense, whatever we want to call it, who is basically purging anyone who might present a countervailing viewpoint to aggressive military tactics, whether it be conventional or potentially nuclear? How do we, the people, push back against that momentum?
Well, we don't really have any power to push back against that momentum without...
Can Congress?
Well, the decision to use nuclear weapons isn't going to happen over a time frame where Congress is going to have much say about it.
Right. But could Congress potentially refuse to confirm some of these appointees? Is that all beyond...
Wow, I mean, if they didn't not confirm Hegseth... And remember, he got confirmed by a vote that was tied.
A different Congress.
Yes.
Could they unconfirm him?
Can they unconfirm him? Right. You mean like impeach him?
Yeah.
I just don't think that's likely. I mean,
even under new leadership.
I think that the only way that you could get the change you're asking for, which is having removal of Hegseth, and believe me, I'm sure there are plenty at the Pentagon that would be perfectly happy to see that happen, even with them having removed so many of the higher levels that were telling him no, and he's just not very well respected among the higher ups at the Pentagon, from what we understand.
Right,
because they don't think he knows.
And I don't think he respects them. I think he has no respect for anybody except those who basically bow the knee.
I mean, you have to watch the tape of him lecturing these generals.
I did see that.
Yeah,
I watched it a couple times.
Thinking these guys are sitting there. Most of them are guys, unfortunately.
And they're sitting there stone-faced.
Because they're having to listen to somebody who was like a major, you know, lecture them about the warrior class, you know. And a lot of what he said clearly fell flat.
It's like having a room full of the best maestros, the best orchestra conductors in the world sitting there listening to Milli Vanilli
I think one thing that's valid in what you're asking is that there's a huge subculture within our government of end timers. And end timers in the sense that they believe in apostolic and religions in which the rapture is the goal, you know.
Is it huge or is it just influential?
I think it's very substantial. I don't know. It's influential, but
maybe it's J.D. Vance. I don't know.
I don't know that Vance is totally on that. Vance is in a conservative Catholic.
Now he is.
Yeah, I don't know how much he's waiting for the rapture. I mean, I think Russ Vaught is probably pretty close. I don't know where Stephen Miller gets his religious beliefs are. The people who go to these prayer meetings that are occurring now as the regular part of working in the federal government, a lot of them, I think, are of the type that believe that the final battle needs to occur, and what they're trying to do is hasten the coming of the kingdom of God now, you know, the seven mountains, is to bring the kingdom of God down to earth now and get rid of all of the woke. You know, and oddly, I'm telling you, Putin clearly sees himself and pushes himself as very much in line with a lot of the same things.
Yeah. That's scary.
It is scary.
Yeah. Anyway, I think the only thing we can do right now is just continue to speak up and continue to work to try to get new leadership, you know, in the U.S. Congress, and whether that's new leadership that's Republican and not afraid of Trump, or whether it's new leadership that's Democrat and willing to ask the tough questions and take stands against where this administration is heading. I think that's key.
Well, I think you also have to populate the military with different people.
Well, and we've had that, and now Trump, and through Hagstaff, is undoing that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, we got to take a short break here, folks. Ed Fallon here with you. Charles Goldman, my guest, back in a minute. And a reminder that underwriting for the Fallon Forum provided by Western Optometry. More information at 515-789-3055. Thanks to our nonprofit partners, including Circle of Peacemakers, formerly the Catholic Peace Ministry. Circle of Peacemakers works with people of all faiths toward a world without war. CPM opposes runaway military spending while domestic needs go unmet. Instead of endless wars, CPM supports diplomacy. Visit circleofpeacemakers.com. At Westrom Optometry, Dr. Joel Westrom and his team provide a variety of services, including comprehensive eye exams, children's eye exams, and LASIK co-management. Whether strictly utilitarian or a fashion statement, your comfort and vision are Westrom's primary concern. Dr. Westrom and his staff will work closely with you to determine the best solution for your eyes, prescription, and lifestyle. Services are provided in English and Spanish, and the clinic is open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. till 5 p.m. and on Saturdays by appointment. That's Westrom Optometry, located in Des Moines East Village. Welcome back to the Fallon Forum. This is Ed Fallon, your host. My guest today, Charles Goldman, coming at you from the heart of America's heartland, Des Moines, Iowa. Underwriting provided by Architecture by Synthesis. More at architecturebysynthesis.com. All right, Charles, AI, the robots, they're coming.
Mm-hmm.
Is the development of AI more accurately compared to the Manhattan Project, in which the nuclear bomb was developed, or is it more like Jurassic Park? There's a really good piece by Garrett Graff that basically asks that question and discusses it pretty extensively. And he says, like, we're living through a weird and similar moment, similar to the development of the Manhattan Project, in technology development now, as we watch the rise and development of AI done with what increasingly looks like wild recklessness. I think that's pretty much spot on. Do you?
Well, I think that one of his first points is that why is he bringing up Jurassic Park? And he's talking about Jurassic Park because, as he says specifically, most people think of Jurassic Park as a cautionary tale of, it's kind of like Frankenstein. Science getting ahead of us, yeah. You know.
Or don't invite the dinosaurs back to live with us.
Right.
Even though they're fascinating.
Well, and that comes from, of course, Michael Crichton's book, in which, you know, they talk a lot about chaos theory and about unexpected, you know, consequences. Of
life finding a way.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Which dinosaur did they design? I've only seen the movie once.
I think it's the Velociraptors. They had to, like, fill some holes with other amphibious DNA, which is really interesting because they're not amphibious, right? Because the whole theory of dinosaurs now is that they were birds. They're from...
We raise chickens and we know they are very much like dinosaurs. If they were bigger, they would totally eat us. Totally eat us.
Yeah, so don't ever fall.
No.
Don't have a heart attack in a chicken coop.
No, we don't let small children out there unwatched.
But the point he's making is that that's really kind of the wrong view here, which is that it's really a corporate tale of corporate trust and safety teams, right? Like, you could have predicted that the dinosaurs would rampage, and you should really pay attention to your fencing, you know, and to your containment.
Well, yeah, when the power grid goes out, boom,
right,
the T-Rex escapes, and everything else escapes too. But also the other thing they didn't predict, of course, was that I think it was the Velociraptors. They'd made sure there was only one gender, but suddenly life found a way, and there were.
Well, I think it was because the amphibious DNA is from a parthenogenic amphibian who can be both species at once.
Hermaphroditic.
Right.
and we actually have seen this. We usually don't have roosters. We have a rooster only when we need to, fertilize some eggs. But there's a role within the chicken world for a rooster-like member of the flock. Mm-hmm. It's to defend. It's to alarm. To sound the alarm. And we had one bird. It was a very gentle bird. It was a big, fat, plump, Cochin buff Orpington, and it took on the role of rooster. I mean, it actually learned how to crow. And when huskies came to try to eat our chickens after they'd eaten our neighbor's chickens.
Yeah.
This bird stood at the gate, and like, roar, just put its chest out and crowed its neck. It was going to get eaten. I mean, it would have died a really quick, horrible death if Kathy hadn't been home and scared the dogs off. But, so life does find a way. The bottom line is things are really, really unpredictable.
Mm-hmm.
And Jurassic Park showed chaos. It showed unpredictability. It showed how things can take really weird and interesting twists and turns. And again, the Manhattan Project, for all the horrible things that have come out of that in terms of the devastation of nuclear war, it was a government project. It was a controlled and it was a group of scientists cooperating to try to come up with a plan to build a bomb before the Germans could do it. And again, it's horrible how this has all panned out. But at least it wasn't a competition. Which one of us scientists can build this bomb first? It wasn't done with this sense of trying to, commercialize something. And yet here we have AI. AI resembles nothing like that. It's not coordinated by a government disinterested in profit, disinterested in seeing who gets it done first.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a Wild West thing.
I think his point is that the three major players, and interestingly, he doesn't consider Tesla, Musk's AI, as a major player in this.
Ouch.
Well, because it's...
Poor Elon.
It's too busy appealing to the South African racists. So basically, he's talking about the players in terms of who wants to supply AI to the military, which is what this specifically is about, is OpenAI, Anthropic, and Google DeepMind.
And the military rejected Anthropic because they were more cautious.
Well, and that's the point he made, which is that, in fact, the three entities do, in fact, resemble some of the scientific conflicts that came up in the Manhattan Project. In terms of Anthropic, is more closely, if you look at a solitary entity, like the Manhattan Project was. I mean, there were people who weren't part of the scientific development of the atomic weapons. They weren't really nuclear weapons, they were atomic. Part of the project was to discuss the ethical considerations in using these weapons. And that was going on independently of the development of the weapons themselves. But you're right. I mean, I think people's concern would be, and we've already seen it, is the drive to win, number one, to win the AI war or competition with China. I've never totally understood this. Everything is always a competition or a war against something. right?
Yeah.
And
when at what point do humans get beyond that? I mean, I think most people want to go beyond that. We may have a nasty neighbor living next door to us, but we really would rather live in a neighborhood with people we get along with.
Well, I mean,
and we'd rather live in a world with people we get along with.
Humanity's only advantage in the the battle of tooth and claw, as Darwin described it, is cooperative. Is the ability to cooperate.
Right.
It's not that there isn't cooperative activity among higher level animals either, but to the level that humans are able to cooperate, that has always been our advantage against much more physically dominant species. So I think the idea that doing this as for profit is the point. It's dangerous. Yeah. It makes it more dangerous because we see that when it's for profit that people will leave their values behind and say, I have to do this because we're a publicly owned company and Milton Friedman.
There's been lots of money invested
about paying
in this.
Off, exactly.
I think what's his name? Amadeo. I forget how to pronounce his name. The head of Anthropic.
Mm-hmm.
That company wants to try to do the right thing. They want to try to make sure that there is restraint and there is a moral direction. They've even hired philosophers to help guide.
I know. Actually read some of the writings of the people.
Yeah,
because they're out there.
But even still, he gives AI a 25% chance of going, quote, really, really badly for civilization. That's if there was something that had that bad of a chance, that big of a chance of going really, really badly, we ought to be putting the brakes on it in a big way. I think the only way, again, if we wanted to apply the Manhattan Project analogy to AI, our model, then what that calls for is immediate and significant regulation. I mean, bring it into line with the common good, the public interest, the planetary interest. And you're only going to get that through some kind of a regulatory framework that provides, some guidance as to where this is going to go.
Well, I think that's true, but one of the problems is that even the people who are the propagators of AI don't totally understand the capabilities.
No, they don't.
Of AI, because it's not just a computer program. It's it's a program that creates perhaps some version of sentience. We don't.
Yeah,
it's very hard to understand what it's doing.
I think that's true. I mean, every week or two, it seems like there's some new thing that to me is jaw dropping. I mean, just last week was it? OpenAI had found that it could hack into another company's system.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't told to do that, but in its interest, it did that. I can't remember the details of what it acquired or learned, but that's not what it was supposed to do. And Meta, our pal Mark Zuckerberg,
mm-hmm.
in that case, he may have actually the company may have actually allowed one of its models to go beyond its programming paradigm and to access some other system. So what does it mean?
I think it downloaded from Pornhub.
Do you think AI is interested in porn?
I expect it was new information and probably like the novelty of it. I don't know.
I want to go back to what Garrett Graff, again, it was his analogy that kind of put this into my head. He says, quote, in the end, as much as our society loves reaching for the romance and audacity of the Manhattan Project as an analog, I continue to believe Jurassic Park is the much better analog. The private team of scientists with inadequate safeguards who charged ahead with groundbreaking, dangerous technologies and, in their excitement, didn't think long enough or hard enough about what they were birthing into the world. Yeah, and we don't know where this thing. It's been birthed.
Well, the other...
Where it's going.
Yeah, one last thing. I mean, as Graf's article points out, forget the history of the original Luddites, which were the textile workers in England. He points out that when coal came out as a fuel, it too was thought that it was going to destroy the Earth. Actually, they're probably right about that in terms of what it was doing to the climate, but they weren't thinking about that back then. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of new technologies come out and everyone's sure they're going to destroy the Earth, destroy humanity. Now, obviously with the AI, it's popular images from before, from science fiction. Essentially, HAL the computer in 2001, and then, of course, the Terminator.
Yeah. You know, ouch.
Yeah.
Hey, Ed Fallon with you folks, Charles Goldman with me, back in a minute. Underwriting provided by Dr. Kim Holding and with Story County Veterinary Clinic, serving Story County pets for over 30 years. More information at Story County Veterinary Clinic's Facebook page. Architecture by Synthesis provides planning, design, and design-build services for high-performance, low-maintenance, affordable homes and buildings. Owner Mark Clipsham asks that you use the most energy-efficient methods you can afford and the greenest, longest-lasting materials available. Examples of Mark's work can be found at architecturebysynthesis.com. That's architecturebysynthesis.com.
At Story County Veterinary Clinic, Dr. Kim Holding has over 30 years of experience working with all creatures, great and small. Cat, dog, horse, cow, elephant. Well, if you've got a pet elephant, you may be in trouble. Kim's clients stick with her year after year because they know she'll do right by them and their pets and farm animals. So give Kim a shout to keep your animals happy and healthy. Call 515-232-8766. That's 232-8766.
All right, then, folks, welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Underwriting for this program provided by Gateway Market, a Des Moines grocery and cafe offering artisan local and global foods and catering for business and social events. More information at gatewaymarket.com. Ed Fallon with you here, and Kathy Burns joining me to talk about the confluence of cheesecake and honey.
We missed National Cheesecake Day this year.
When was
I guess it was July 30th. Next year, what's wrong with us? Get it on the calendar.
And I love it. Cheesecake is one of my favorite favorite cakes.
And honey is one of our favorite foods, and
it's
we are beekeepers.
Yeah.
So I like to look at food history and read about food history.
And I like when you do it.
It always inspires me. Most historians believe cheesecake originated in ancient Greece.
Wow, really? Way back then?
Well, their cakes containing cheese were reported to being served to Olympic athletes as early as 776 BC, and it was to give them energy.
Okay, well, that's better than steroids.
Yeah, and the reason that honey was a common ingredient, of course, in cheesecakes.
Sure.
You want something sweet, and there was no such thing as refined sugar substance. So I have a book called A History of Food in 100 Recipes, and there is a chapter titled Honeyed Cheesecakes. So this Greek scholar named Athenaeus, around 200 AD, attributed a recipe in his book to a scholar or a dramatist named Epicharmus. Excuse me. He lived in 500 BC. Here's the recipe.
Okay. Drum roll.
Wheaten flour is wetted and then put into a frying pan. After that, honey is sprinkled over it and sesame and cheese.
Okay. I'm just going to say that sounds boring.
That's a recipe.
That sounds really boring.
And when you go looking for ancient recipes, they are basically just you, they presume you know how to do all of this, and everybody's is going to turn out different. But honey was revered back in ancient times. It really is. It was a sweet flavor, some supposed medicinal properties, but it was also thought to be a gift from the gods. It was thought to be the food of the gods that they gifted to humans when a nymph named Melissa taught humans how to gather.
I know Melissa. I didn't know she was still around.
Well, if she's a god, she's still around. Point. Yeah.
So it was also in Egypt too, right?
Mm-hmm. They were bees. Supposedly came from the tears of the sun god Ra, and in Hindu tradition, there is honey as a symbol for Vishnu, Krishna, and other deities.
Yeah, and I'm glad to know the cheesecakes have evolved, because I really like the current version better than the one you described.
Well, I'd like to try something similar to some of the ancient ones.
I will be your guinea pig.
For instance, in 350 BC, a delicacy called plakus, maybe, was served at the ends of meals alongside dried fruits and nuts. It was supposed to have had a goat cheese, which I like very much, and be soaked in honey from Mount, how do you say that? Hymettos?
I don't know.
In Athens. So eventually the concept of cheesecake went to Rome, and there it supposedly was created into a precursor to the cheesecakes that we know
today.
So
when did it get really good, the big, fluffy, New York-style cheesecake? Was it not till New York, or did that style of cheesecake happen somewhere else?
I don't have that information, but what I can tell you is that in the 18th century, of course, as sugar became common, refined sugar, a lot of the cheesecake changed, because you're not just dripping the honey over it anymore. Mm. You're combining it into it. You're adding egg. You're adding possibly some sour cream. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's what you're thinking of. And the really big New York classic cheesecakes don't have that graham cracker crust usually.
They have graham cracker crust.
I know you do. Yeah. I kind of like a self-crusting cheesecake. But what this means is we should go head-to-head and each make a cheesecake.
Okay.
And very soon, like small ones, and then have tasting, have friends over for tasting.
Ooh, okay. You want to be one of our friends when we do that.
Okay.
but I'm a little disappointed to know that sugar replaced honey, but... Mm-hmm. I probably wouldn't taste quite the same with honey instead of sugar.
I'd like to try that kind of ancient version with all the different dried fruits and things.
And since we're swimming in a world of peaches right now here in Iowa.
Tis the season.
Peaches with cream cheesecake.
And honey.
All right.
Let's do it.
Hey, folks, this has been Ed Fallon. Thanks to our guest today, Charles Goldman. Thanks to our production team of Sherry Herdina, Forrest Dederman, Charles, and Kathy. Thanks also to the Des Moines Irish Session for our bumper music. Underwriting provided by Gateway Marketing Cafe, Story County Veterinary Clinic, Western Optometry, David Drake Family Psychiatry, Architecture by Synthesis, and real estate agent Joe Henry. Also, Circle of Peacemakers, Iowa Physicians for Social Responsibility, Bold Iowa, Birds and Bees Urban Farm, and Climate March. This is Ed Fallon, host of the Fallon Forum. Back next week, folks, with another hour of Cutting Edge Talk Radio.
She's as sweet as Tupelo honey. She's an angel of the first degree. She's as sweet. She's as sweet as Tupelo honey. Just like honey, baby, from the